Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
The MIA Files, the ultimate Dolphins podcast.
Welcome aboard. I'm your host, Sean Drotar, and with week four in the books, it's time to take a spin around the NFL and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his special insights regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. And today in this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the Monday morning quarterback himself, Peter King, will join us. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
Joining us now from 640 AM Fox Sports South Florida is Joe Ranieri. You can follow him at Joe Ranieri 640. That's R-A-I-N-E-R-I. Joe, the Dolphins had a disappointing outing in Cincinnati. Now, we know the Bengals are a perennial playoff team. They're where the Dolphins want to be. But this wasn't all that competitive a game, especially after the first quarter. The Dolphins basically disappeared. How come this team hasn't seen the kind of improvement towards over the course of the season that they had hoped?
I don't even know what it must have been like for Adam Gase, Ryan Tannehill, the offensive line, cornerback Tony Lippett. I can't imagine what it must have been like for those guys to watch half this film back. I wouldn't even watch it. I might have burned it myself. But if they did look at it, you'll see that it's kind of the same old with the Dolphins. It starts with the offensive line. It starts with Ryan Tannehill not being able to get comfortable, not being able to have enough time. We knew going into this season that we had some issues in the secondary, and it's quite obvious that there's an issue going on with Maxwell right now in the secondary. I think a message was being sent very loud and very clearly when he was sat in favor of Tony Lippett to start in the secondary there, going up against A.J. Green, of all people. It's kind of a mess, which is really what it has been from for a very long time for the Miami Dolphins right now. But I think it all starts with that offensive line.
You generally, when you see a team that's not running well and they're giving up a lot of sacks, yeah, that's indicative of the line. Now, how did they go ahead and fix that? Is there anything they can do, whether it's in play calling or personnel, or are you hoping for better health? What can you try to do to get that back on track? Because without it, you're right. The Dolphins are basically, for lack of a better term, dead in the water.
Yeah, and it's really a systemic problem that we've had here from the top down with the Dolphins organization. I do happen to think that they finally got it right with bringing in Adam Gase as a coach. I think, you know, we had Dennis Hickey. Was Dennis Hickey the general manager last year? Was he not? Was he the general manager before? Mike Tannenbaum was lurking. You had the Joe Feldman era, which was just an absolute disaster. You can keep going back over the years and going, what are we doing? We're drafting position players. We're trying to build a team by bringing in, from the wide receiver position in instead of the offensive line out. It's just been this way for so long down here with the Dolphins. And I think finally they've got the structure in place with a Mike Tannenbaum, with an Adam Gase, that the drafts are going to be a little bit better. I think Laremy Tunsil, if there was one great thing that came out of that that loss against Cincinnati, is that we figured out that Laremy Tunsil, yes, he erred a few times in that game, but I think he has showed us all the reasons why he's going to be a Pro Bowl offensive lineman in the future. So I think they got that right. They also get Mike Pouncey back, who missed the first four games of the season because of an injury suffered in preseason. Brandon Albert wasn't in that game. So they're getting a little healthier, but, you know, once again, they still got to get some production out of a Juwan James and Billy Turner at the guard position. And more than anything else, they need a running back that they can count on that can help alleviate some of the unbelievable pressure that Ryan Tannehill has seen. If we can get an Arian Foster back healthy and we can start establishing the run a little bit more, I think the rest will take care of itself. But at this particular point, the offensive line, it's a lot of duct tape, it's a lot of glue, and we're hoping it sticks together until reinforcements come.
There actually were some positive signs. Now, obviously, the Bengals were ahead for much of the game. The Dolphins had to play catch-up. They only ran the ball 13 times, but Ajayi averaged 5.5 per carry. Kenyon Drake, only 2 carries, but 7.5. And Damian Williams, another 4.5. So there seemed to be a little progress there. They were getting at least some consistency in the length of their carries because they didn't have, you know, big long ones there, but they were getting the consistency. Sometimes that helps with the third down situations. But when you look at the rest of the way this offense works, if they can't find the running back and if they can't seem to get it by committee, where else can they find offense? Or is this just a situation where the Dolphins could be looking at a season where not only maybe the season is lost, but the window for Ryan Tannehill to improve? Adam Gase was brought in here basically as sort of a quarterback whisperer, for lack of a better term. If they can't find that, what happens with Ryan Tannehill, not only in the short term, but potentially in the long term?
Well, it's so funny. We're so quick to point the fingers at the quarterback in this league. And listen, Ryan Tannehill has not been great by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think Ryan Tannehill is the problem, nor do I think alone can he be the ultimate solution for the Miami Dolphins. I think when you deal with 5 years of, you know, front office disaster and draft picks that just did not pan out, and trying to piecemeal a team together, and you bring in a guy that only spent a couple of years in college who was not really a quarterback in college. He was a wide receiver to start with in A&M and then eventually switched over to the quarterback position. You give him 3 offensive coordinators. You know, you give him a whole slew of different coaches and different people pointing him in the direction. And this is what you get. You know, the NFL is about creating stability and creating continuity, and the Dolphins have been anything but that. Now, having said that, again, here's Adam Gase. He's got Ryan Tannehill for the first time. I do think the first 4 weeks of any NFL season is all about, it's just an extension of preseason anyway. I still think they're trying to figure it out. I do think the next 2 to 3 games will be very telling for the Miami Dolphins. They got the pieces. They've got the Jarvis Landrys. If they can stay healthy on the offensive line, if we can give Tannehill just some time in the pocket to be able to get comfortable and be able to get the ball to his playmakers, I think good things will happen. But he also needs help on the defensive side of the ball, because the defense right now has not been great at all. I mean, they're 29th in yards allowed, and they're dead last against the run. And when you have an Ndamukong Suh, a Mario Williams, a Cameron Wake on that side of the ball, the defense has to do their part as well. And when you put it all together, that's what you have, is basically a 1-3 team, and they're lucky to be that.
Yeah, that's obviously challenging, especially when you're talking about the names that are on that defense. When they're not performing, that's extremely frustrating for not only a coach, but a fan base as well. Fortunately,
absolutely,
the Titans come into town. They're not world beaters. This seems like an opportunity for the Dolphins to get it right. What would you see in this game if they come away with a win that would make you think, all right, there's still time to turn the ship around?
I think it's got to start with the defense. We know what they're going to do with Tennessee. They are going to hand the ball off left. They're going to hand it off right to DeMarco Murray, and they're going to try and pound the ball in there. And Marcus Mariota, it seems as if they still have the kid gloves on him right now. He seems to be regressing. He's completing a lower percentage of his passes. He wasn't great last week by any stretch of the imagination. And I think if it's going to turn around with the Dolphins, it's going to turn around first on the defensive side of the ball, where they're going to be able to give Ryan Tannehill, they're going to be able to give that offense more opportunities in the game. There's going to be more 3-and-outs against the Tennessee Titans. They're going to get to Mariota. They haven't done a very good job of being able to get to anybody right now, quarterback-wise. And if they can't stop the run, it's going to be a very long afternoon once again. And the Dolphins, just once, I'd like to see them played with a lead as opposed to trying to come from behind. Because if Tannehill's got to throw the ball 30, 35 times in a game, we've got problems.
That is definitely one of the things you want to see, is you want to see how a team adjusts with the lead. Playing from behind isn't a recipe for success. You can catch Joe Ranieri 6:40 a.m. Fox Sports South Florida, and you can follow him on Twitter at Joe Ranieri 6:40. That's spelled R-A-I-N-E-R-I, and follow everything to do with the Dolphins with him as their season kind of hangs in the balance. Joe, thank you so much for the insight on this very interesting club.
Appreciate it, Sean.
We will be back on the other side with the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now it's time for the coach, Brian Billick, who's brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time with SeatGeek. Coach, when you use SeatGeek, what makes that so great?
Well, it's got too many things to cover in just one show. I mean, the great thing is the how broad-based in terms of the different ticket agencies that it brings together for you. You're going to get the best choice. You're going to see exactly where the seats are. You're going to get a rating on how good a deal this is. And most importantly, every transaction is guaranteed by SeatGeek.
Well, I know I use it, and if you use it as well, you can now today use the promo code Billick, and then you'll get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. So do what I do. Do what the coach does. Use SeatGeek. Make sure you get your family the best seats for concerts, sports, and everything else that you can go enjoy. Coach, this is another fascinating week in the NFL, as it always is. But I'll start with the most recent game, the Monday night game last night. We watched the Minnesota Vikings leap to still continue their run. They're now 4-0. There have been essentially a surprise for everybody, in as much as the pieces seem to keep falling off the car here and there, but the car keeps going at full speed. You know, what kind of job are they getting done up there in Minnesota? It's extremely impressive.
Yeah, spectacular, and it's because you can base it on defense. This is, for my money, maybe the best defense in the National Football League. They're built right, a dominant front seven, a secondary that doesn't give up big plays. That was the thing last night that jumped out at you, and you knew it was going to be a problem for the New York Giants. They had one big play, the big 67-yarder that they were able to hit, and that was it. You have to try to generate some big plays particularly when you're going to go on the road. And then Minnesota, although not overwhelmingly on offense, but were able to, you know, kind of keep the drives alive. They were 8 of 16 on third down, so they kind of kept the drives alive. They did not turn the ball over. Sam Bradford was excellent that way. And they got just enough out of the running game, which they stuck with 30-plus carries for over 100 yards, that the Giants just couldn't combat that on the road. That's going to be the formula that Minnesota will win with all year long.
Looking over at the NFC East now that the Giants lost that game, they are at 2-2. They started out well, and I think people thought that maybe this was going to all fit for them going over the season. Now they've lost to everybody else in the divisions on a winning streak. Philly, of course, still leads now with the bye week. They're still unbeaten at 3-0. But there isn't a team with a losing record. Now we're only four games in. But have we underestimated the NFC East, or has this been something of a beneficiary of the schedule?
Yeah, to a degree. We'll see when they start really taking each other on. We're going to find out about the Philadelphia Eagles, who right now look pretty darn good. I mean, when you look at what happened over the weekend, how impressive is Pittsburgh and what they did to Kansas City? Well, what does that tell us about Philadelphia, who beat them last week and held them to 3 points? How good are, by way of example as well, the Oakland Raiders, who we were kind of dismissive of the fact because they lost at home to Atlanta. They go on the road and beat an undefeated Baltimore team. How good does that tell us Atlanta is? So, you know, you can draw some comparisons. Philadelphia's for real. We're going to find out going forward just how much for real. And the Dallas Cowboys, again, the schedule has not been that taxing for them. But by the same token, you know, they've looked pretty darn good with a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back that they lead the league in third down conversions, and they've got the top runner in the National Football League. So, yeah, particularly with New York and Dallas, these teams are for real. Washington still seems to be trying to get its footing. Don't know about them, and we'll see. You know, obviously they have a chance to continue to get better as we move along here. But the division looks very, very good. But I don't know that there's any dominating teams in it. Outside, we'll see how good Philly is. But I don't know that there is any dominating team or division in the NFC right now.
Let's take a look over at those Steelers in the AFC. Now they got Le'Veon Bell back, and you could see what a difference that makes. Pittsburgh's offense essentially just rolled, and this is something that they can do. You saw Le'Veon Bell line up even as a wide receiver for more than a few snaps to make sure that they mix things up and were able to still use D'Angelo Williams, give the Chiefs a lot of different looks. When you look at the AFC now with Pittsburgh kind of being all together again, Pittsburgh – New England, Houston, all leading their divisions at 3-1, Denver at 4-0. Which of these are contenders, and which of these maybe still have a little bit of work to do to get that way?
Well, I think they're all contenders. Denver playing great defense and running the ball, and notwithstanding the quarterback position, but they both, Paxton Lynch, looked very calm when he went in. Trevor Siemian, obviously, has played very solid. The Pittsburgh Steelers still remain to me, you know, this could be a truly dominant team. But here they're a week removed from losing 34-3 to the Philadelphia Eagles. So we still have some sorting out to do. We're only at the quarter mark. We'll know more at the halfway mark, obviously. And for the Steelers coming up, this week they're going to play the Jets. How real are the Jets? Another team that a couple weeks ago, me included, were saying, wow, this team is a Super Bowl caliber team. Now they can't even get out of their way, having 9 interceptions in the last 2 games. But we're going to find out about the Steelers because they're going to play the Jets. They have to go to Miami, and it's always tough going down into Miami to play. And then they're going to play the New England Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens. So we're going to know by the midway point just how real and consistent the Pittsburgh Steelers are. Was that 34-3 beatdown by the Philadelphia Eagles the proverbial wake-up call, or was it an indicator that maybe there are still some chinks in the armor?
Well, one of the teams that you mentioned also earlier that surprised, I think, a lot of folks, the Atlanta Falcons are 3-1. There is an impression that maybe they're doing it with smoke and mirrors to an extent. They lost that opening game to Tampa Bay when Jameis Winston just looked electric, and he hasn't looked the same since. But they're averaging almost 40 points a game. That's probably not sustainable. But given the shootouts they've been in, you wonder if that's almost what they're going to have to do to keep winning. So if you're the Atlanta Falcons, what do you do to keep everything rolling, knowing that you probably can't, barring something very strange, keep putting up 40 a game?
Yeah, well, the most impressive thing to me is the fact that the wins they've gotten on the road at Oakland and New Orleans. I know New Orleans isn't a great team, but still a tough place to play. And then a very physical Carolina Panther team. And to win where they did with Matt Ryan having a record year, he's on pace to just blow away. 2012 was his best year. We had, 4,700 yards, and I think it was 36 touchdowns, something like that. He's on pace to just blow that away. You're right. It's unrealistic to think they're going to stay at this pace. But with Devontae Freeman in the backfield, with Mohamed Sanu opposite the receiver, they're, and the offensive line playing very well, this is a very legitimate offensive group. Now, defensively, they may have to score 40 points a game because defensively, I think they still may struggle a little bit. Remember now, they did give up 33 points to Carolina and 32 points to New Orleans. Now, that's Drew Brees and Cam Newton. I get that. But they also gave up 28 points to the Oakland Raiders and 31 points to Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think they're still struggling defense. The key is, can they increase their pass rush ability a little bit, get a little bit better that way? But I think this is a team that certainly can be a factor.
The Patriots have Tom Brady back in action this week. They play the Browns, who are winless. This doesn't look like a real good matchup for the Browns, but it looks like a great place for Tom Brady to kickstart his 2016 campaign. Do you expect any sort of growing pains or any sort of wobbliness coming back, or is Brady and Belichick, is this a well-oiled enough machine that it's going to look like he never left?
Oh, no, yeah, more of the latter, although there may be some hiccups on the way. I look at this like a Broadway play. What do? You take it out of town to get it up to snuff, and you bring it back to town into New York. Well, this is their off-Broadway, out-of-town debut, good place to go, play a Cleveland team. I don't know. I mean, the football gods just, I don't know what they have against the Cleveland Browns. The tight losses they've had, and now they've got to take on the New England Patriots. Oh, by the way, Tom Brady coming back. Tough combination. Obviously a good team for New England to open with on the road. Kind of, get the, dust off the rust, so to speak. And I imagine it'll be a game plan that's heavy. Cleveland's near last in the league, or one of the worst teams in the league against the run, so I imagine we're going to see a lot of LeGarrette Blount, let Tom Brady get his speed underneath him. And so then when they come back, we'll see exactly after, because, they got some interesting games after this, and they're obviously poised for it. Most, not the least of which, they're going to play the Cincinnati Bengals. They got to play the Pittsburgh Steelers at Pittsburgh. And then they get to go back at those Buffalo Bills who they just lost to. So they're gonna be challenged coming up, but I'm sure they're excited about it.
Well, we've been talking about the good thing teams have been doing, and there's a lot of those stories around the league, but one of the ones that stands out is a team that's not getting it done, and that is the Arizona Cardinals, now 1-3. Carson Palmer in the concussion protocol. They have a Thursday night football game coming up. on the surface, it doesn't look like there's that much wrong with the Cardinals. But something is obviously off kilter, Coach. What are you seeing?
Well, they're a little like the Carolina Panthers. I was talking all day yesterday on my shows for the NFL Network. People say, okay, what's wrong with the Carolina Panthers? And when you look at them, they're not far off. I mean, they're not running the ball quite as well as last year. They're not quite as good on third down. They're not quite as explosive. Defensively, they're not quite as dynamic. They're good, but not quite what we saw last year. And you add all those up, and all of a sudden now, that means some losses. The Arizona Cardinals appear the same way. They just don't seem to be as good as they were last year. Still solid, but not good enough, obviously, to get a win. And now they've played a couple good teams here. The New England Patriots, obviously, Buffalo in a little bit of a role. The Rams, it's always a tough defensive struggle with the Rams. But, yeah, I'm not quite sure what's going to have to happen. The offensive line's going to have to step up. They're going to have to start getting down the field a little bit more with that gifted receiving core they have. And that front seven in particular, the defense needs to start showing up and doing the things that it did last year in terms of putting pressure on the quarterback and stuffing the running game.
He is the coach, Brian Billick, and you can use that same last name, Billick, on the SeatGeek app right now and get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. Coach, thank you so much for the insight. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Coming up next, we'll go into overtime with Peter King.
Overtime.
This week, we're delighted to be joined by Peter King, editor-in-chief of MMQB.com. That's Monday Morning Quarterback, the site that's become synonymous with the best and deepest NFL coverage anywhere. Peter's brought to us by SeatGeek, because it's football season. The NFL and college football are in full swing. Baseball's playoffs are upon us, so be sure to visit SeatGeek.com and download the SeatGeek app for all the best ticket deals. Remember, the NHL and NBA seasons are on the horizon, too, so make sure you and your family are getting the best deals for the most exciting sporting events every time with SeatGeek. How are you doing today, Peter?
Everything's going great. Thank you for hosting me today. This is going to be fun.
Our pleasure. Well, I'll go with a couple quick ones for you. We'll start right here. Odell Beckham Jr. suggested that he's being targeted by officials after his three-catch, 23-yard performance on Monday Night Football. Do the Zebras really let defenders have their way with him more than any other receiver?
No, but that was a marginal call against the Minnesota Vikings that Xavier Rhodes could have been flagged for hitting Beckham out of bounds, but my feeling is that once you start to get this paranoia that the league is against you, that the officials are against you, I think Odell Beckham needs to understand that every official in this league is judged on every call he makes. And if he goes over the line on Odell Beckham Jr. to either call something against him or to do something out of the ordinary against one player, A, he's not going to get any playoff assignments. B, he's not going to be in the league for very long. So I think most of that is a figment of Odell Beckham's imagination.
Well, let's stick with wide receivers. Josh Gordon will stay on the reserve suspended list after saying he would enter rehab. And that seems like the right thing for him. I don't think there's any question about that. And while there's no need for the Browns to move on immediately, is this relationship irrevocably damaged?
I think the Browns, especially the current iteration of the front office and coaching staff, I had invested so much time and energy, and basically it's about the fourth major stumble that he's had, Josh Gordon has had. And my feeling is that at this point, especially when you're trying to build a program, you are getting ready to have him come onto your team after being let back in football by the NFL after his year-long suspension. And you have to ask yourself, why are we in this business? Are we in this business to try to get somebody off the substances that have bedeviled him for most of his adult life? Or are we in here to win football games? Well, I think most teams would say, maybe one, two, or three strikes, okay, we can take it from a great player, but no matter how great he is, at some point, we got to pull the plug. In my opinion, the Browns have reached that point.
I don't know if they are going to, get rid of him after he finishes this rehab, but in my opinion, they should.
Coming off their shocking shutout win over the Patriots, the Bills coach Rex Ryan said that he was, quote, BSing about having sources that tipped him off about Jacoby Brissett starting at quarterback. Now, with Rex, you know there's a lot of gamesmanship. Is this just fun, or does this maybe start to undermine the trust between the Bills, Ryan, and the media that covers him?
I mean, anybody who – I read his transcript from the press conference where he claimed to know what was going on with the Patriots. There's no way he was going to know what goes on with the Patriots. There's no way he's going to know who's going to start for the Patriots. He says that almost in a comedic way, and it's just part of his shtick. I mean, maybe it's because I've known Ryan for a long time, and I've listened to him for a long time, but he's one of those coaches that about 85% of what he says, I think, just goes in one ear and out the other because a lot of it is so silly. I just don't think it matters. And I don't think that we ought to be taking seriously when he gets on the conference call and asks Julian Edelman, hey, Julian Waltatulski from the Buffalo News, are you playing quarterback this week? I mean, it's a shtick. It's fun. So I don't think it's to be taken very seriously.
Well, keeping in the taking maybe a little gamesmanship being taken seriously, Josh Norman really went after the Carolina Panthers after their loss this season, needling them, saying, quote, you get what you pay for. Now, obviously, they parted ways with him in the offseason in one of sort of the most bizarre and notable stories in the offseason. How badly did the Panthers realistically now regret that decision?
Well, I know Dave Gettleman quite well. He's general manager of the Panthers. And I can tell you pretty categorically that Dave Gettleman does not regret the decision. And in fact, let's think about, I just looked this up yesterday. Let's think about the Carolina Panthers right now and what they've done so far this year. Their defense in the first three games of the year allowed 307, 302, and 211 net yards. And so that is not, it's not the defense's fault what's going on. Now, they got shredded by the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday. So everybody is going to say, clearly, their defense, the rush isn't there. They don't cover as well, blah, blah, blah. And in my opinion, I talked to Julio Jones after this game. I really think that a part of the problem was in the game plan, was in how they defended Julio Jones. Because in a lot of ways, they singled Julio Jones, his 77 or 75 yard touchdown, whatever it was. Ben Wickery didn't have any help until he was too far gone. So I just look at this and I say we can't really be prisoners of the moment. They had a really bad defensive game, but they just simply don't believe in paying a cornerback $15 million or $14 million, whatever it was. And so far, since Gettleman has gotten there, he's been proven right in his personnel acumen. We'll see how this pans out, but no, I don't think they're second-guessing themselves over it.
Last one, Peter. The first-round pick, Paxton Lynch, played well at quarterback in relief of the injured Trevor Siemian in Denver's easy win over Tampa. Broncos coach Gary Kubiak stated unequivocally that Siemian would remain the starter. Now, is that the right choice, or is it just the safe one?
It's the right choice. I think Gary Kubiak loved the intelligence and the decision-making of Trevor Siemian, and he's got better arm than people give him credit for. So I think that Trevor Siemian not only has done nothing to lose this job, but he's really, in the last, whatever, six quarters that he played, he was a huge factor in helping his team win. So I think this absolutely is the right decision. You don't make a replacement at a position on the field unless you are trying to make your team better. Benching a healthy enough Trevor Siemian would be making this team worse.
Brought to you by SeatGeek. He's the one and only Peter King. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at @SI_PeterKing and visit MMQB.com for the most insightful NFL coverage on a daily basis. Thanks for your time, Peter.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's the final gun, and it's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files. Check out all the podcasts for every team in the league because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at @SDrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. We'll catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.